Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Viewing Angles podcast. I am your A-host, Dan Leo, and with me, as always, is my little boy in blue.
Yeah, also known as the living manifestation of destiny, Robert Mecki.
I knew I'd meet destiny one day. Anyway, out of that horrible riff, let's get into... It's going to be a very special episode this week,
folks. Yeah, let's get right into the meat and potatoes.
Yeah, this is our very possible Mission Impossible flavored podcast for you this week.
Good one.
We've got the new Mission Impossible movie is what we're going to be reviewing. And then afterwards, we're going to be running through the series, a special feature for Mission Impossible. We're going to run the series, ranking our favorite Mission Impossible movies in order in an order that might surprise you. Mayhaps.
It's definitely going to surprise you.
Yeah. So let's, I guess, just get right into it. Rob, what did you think about Mission Impossible Fallout, the Tom Cruise vehicle starring Tom Cruise, Rebecca Ferguson, Ving Rhames, other people?
Simon Pegg, Henry Cavill, Angela Bassett, Alec Baldwin. Man, everybody's in this movie.
Everybody's in this movie. What did you think about this?
I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with it, but I think I liked the fifth one better.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? This muted praise.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to, I feel anytime this happens where I feel like I don't like the movie as much as like, I think this movie has like a 98 on Rotten Tomatoes or something, or some ungodly Metacritic, especially for a Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah.
And it always feels like I feel like I'm being intentionally contrarian whenever I talk about why I don't like this movie as much as everyone else did. And it makes me feel weird. So I'm not trying to be muted about this. But yeah, I thought
hey,
that
man, it's okay.
Some...
All opinions are accepted. I mean, I don't know what it's right. I don't know what it's like to be wrong like you are, but I fully respect your right to do it. What didn't you like about the movie?
This movie had fine set pieces. But I think I liked the characterization of Ethan Hunt more in Rogue Nation and Ghost Protocol. And I think that part of the reason I also didn't like this movie as much as the previous films was this was the first sequel. Not the first sequel, but it felt like the first directly connected sequel in the Mission Impossible franchise, where they brought the villain back. And you actually had to, it was kind of the whole thing with his wife, like that played a way bigger part, in the story than I was expecting it to, considering that his wife hasn't really mattered since like 2006.
Which you explained.
it felt, a little odd, and I feel like I wasn't as wowed with some. I feel like the pacing of the set pieces was also better in the fourth and fifth one than it was in this one. The stunts themselves were very impressive, and like I am not questioning that Tom Cruise has a death wish still. I fully believe that, but I just think that as a theatrical experience, the other films were a little better paced.
I think from the very beginning, this movie, I loved this movie. It is so good. I have not had as much fun seeing a movie since probably Mad Max Fury Road. And I love Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed this so much. From the very beginning, this movie kind of like quells any suspicion you might have. Like, is this going to be that good? It's just saying like, we're smarter than you. Just sit back and enjoy this movie. Like totally with... out any
is it smarter than you though?
I got bamboozled.
Wait, what did
you get tricked?
Tricked by what?
Did you get surprised by what? Did this movie ever surprise you and be like, oh,
not really?
Really?
Yeah,
you saw everything coming.
I think so. I'm trying to think back. I'm pretty sure
you saw all those mask pulls, boy.
Yeah.
Oh man, I think cynical to enjoy movies then.
I know. Well, I think part of it too is like I literally watched I watched Ghost Protocol the day before I saw this movie, and then I watched Rogue Nation like hours before I went in to see this movie. So I might have just been oversaturated with Mission Impossible and Ethan Hunt, but
you think you were just like seeing the code?
Yeah, you know, the patterns start to come out.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. And that raises a good, because I hadn't seen those two in a hot second. But like in a few days.
Oh, okay.
Like if you're saying that you went right from the fifth one into the sixth one.
Yeah.
I had some buffer time.
Yeah. It was like a Netflix binge. And I think that's another thing is, I know that story really doesn't matter in Mission Impossible movies, but this is the third movie we've gotten where the only motivation of the villain is, I want to start a new world order with nukes.
Isn't that the perfect villain?
The perfect villain, like, to me was Philip Seymour Hoffman. Philip Seymour Hoffman was the perfect Mission Impossible villain, because he wasn't like this megalomaniac. He wasn't this global terrorist. He was just a fucking, like, he was an arms dealer. That's it.
Yeah, he was just an arms dealer. But say Max in the, well, I guess they were traitors. Mission Impossible 3 gives up on having a plot, though.
Yeah, you know, but it's better for it. Like, it boils it down to the bare essentials.
It is literally, there's a line in the movie at the very end, I don't know if you remember it, where they reveal that they don't even know what it is. They don't even know what the rabbit's foot is.
He's like, so what is the rabbit's foot? And he's like, if you stay, I'll tell you. I thought that was hilarious. Like, it so clearly knows that these are just vehicles to watch Tom Cruise run. Like, you don't need to bog it down with... Like, okay, so...
But it also has the worst stunts. Mission Impossible 3.
So. I think
one memorable
some good stunts
in that movie.
I mean, does Tom Cruise running count as a stunt?
No.
The skyscraper fulcrum, I think that was pretty good. And then when he parachutes down into the moving car, and then he leans out of the car at, like, during the highway chase to shoot at the cars chasing him. Mission Impossible 3. And then there's the entire helicopter... wind turbine flight sequence in the beginning. Mission Impossible 3, I think you're underrating. I think Mission Impossible 3 is pretty good.
I think it's pretty good. I think it's not as good as some of the other ones.
I agree.
Okay, I don't want to relitigate Mission Impossible before we get to it. Mission Impossible 3 before we get to it, because we will litigate it. But I'm talking about this movie and just how enjoyable it was. And the set pieces, it's got the most insane stunts I've ever seen in any movie.
You haven't seen a Jackie Chan movie, then?
I have seen a Jackie Chan doesn't jump out of a plane, man.
I'm pretty sure he has.
I'm sure he has. I actually have seen him hang from a helicopter.
I mean, I think it's fair to say that Tom Cruise is the American Jackie Chan.
Yeah, well, I think Jackie Chan is more of like a choreographer, like a fight choreographer.
He's good at fighting, but he does all of his own stunts as well.
Yeah, he's like a part of like a stunt team.
Jackie Chan has definitely gotten more injured during his doing his own stunts than Tom Cruise has gotten injured doing his own stunts.
Right, but Jackie Chan is like a stuntman, kind of like first and foremost. The beauty of Tom Cruise is that he started as just like a regular like teen heartthrob and then became a serious actor.
And then became
crazy
a Scientologist.
And then started doing all of his own stunts. Like, that's the narrative that I can get behind with Tom Cruise and his stunts. And while I concede that Jackie Chan's stunts are pretty great, like overall consistent, like, you know, he has put out way more movies of him doing stunts than Tom Cruise. The stunts in this movie specifically, there's so many of them and they are all intense. They all are, you know, I had to keep reminding myself that Tom Cruise did not die during the making of this movie. That alone was pulling me along, and them just saying, like, you know, it was the frequency and how well I felt. I know you felt that the pacing wasn't that good, but I felt like it transitioned from set piece to set piece so smoothly, and it was so full of like fun. Maybe I think it is really your perception of it might be marred by how quickly you saw it in reference to.
Yeah, I'm sure that I will, because I actually experienced that when I was rewatching some of these old Mission Impossibles. Like, I remember not enjoying them as much when I saw them initially in theaters, but then I watched them again and I was like, oh, that was actually quite good. So I'm sure the same is going to happen for me with this movie when it's out on video, and I just want to, you know, whenever Mission Impossible 7 comes out and I do this bullshit again and I watch all the Mission Impossibles again, I'm probably going to look back at Fallout and be like, oh, that was actually quite fun.
As long as you never enjoy anything, that's all that I really care about.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're stuck in a cycle of not enjoying things as you see them, only in retrospect.
Yeah, that's my life. What can I say?
No, I think because part of my enjoyment is coming from the, you know, Mission Impossible is a goofy movie. And for every time they have like the misdirection, you know, it's like the Ocean's movies for me. Like when they get you the first time, you're just like, oh, you got me. And then it's like every other time they get you, it's like, oh, it's like a multiplier. And it's just like, I was so ready to be entertained that my cynicism did not play out. I was not expecting to be bamboozled. I didn't feel like I could see immediately how seeing them close together would allow you to like put up the dots, because the Mission Impossible movies start in very similar, like they have some tropes.
I think this one actually started with the most odd intro to any Mission Impossible movie.
Oh yeah, the most intense, I would say. Well, I think, besides 3 is the most intense.
I was going to say, 3 to me is the most intense. I think the throat opening to 3 is great. This one just felt kind of... Okay, so... I feel like I'm just nitpicking this movie, this entire review. But another weird thing that this movie did that I don't think any Mission Impossible has done before is... like the not flashbacks, just like, I guess, dream sequences.
Okay, I know what you're talking about, and I agree with you on that. If it wasn't so well done, the only way they could even think about getting away with it is because of how well done it was, I think. And just being like, but then it does have that moment of just like, oh, come on. Like,
yeah. Like, oh, so that didn't mean anything. That was like the definition of filler.
Yeah. And I'm just like, okay. Like, but I did not let that stop me from enjoying this movie.
Yeah.
And it could have.
Yeah. I feel
sometimes, like, no, I think this is an important thing to talk about, because I feel like this sometimes, where when you're watching a movie, there are things in a movie, very few movies are perfect. I have probably like a very small list of perfect movies.
Mm-hmm.
There are times in most movies when you see something and you're like, this, I could make a big deal about this. This could really hurt my enjoyment of this movie.
You can choose to ignore it.
You can choose to ignore it. I'm telling you, everybody, you can choose to ignore that feeling.
Yeah.
I did.
Do it more often.
Yeah, really. We're not just called the only movie podcast because there's no other movie podcast in the podcast world. We're called the only movie podcast because we're the only movie podcast that tells it like it is.
Yeah, we're telling the truth out here.
Yeah, sometimes your enjoyment of a movie is yourself. The only thing impeding your enjoyment of a movie.
Yeah, the more you enjoy a movie, the more you enjoy yourself. Think about that.
Yeah, that's food for thought.
Mm-hmm.
You can get throw pillows with that put on it. Somewhere on our website. No,
that's our merch. That's our merch coming out in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, perfect. So I guess what I'm saying, we can wrap up with our final thoughts and start getting down. I think
getting to the nitty gritty.
Yeah, this is a super enjoyable action movie. It is something, it's refreshing to see something that's not like in any way like political or have any kind of like commentary of just like, we're here to entertain you. I feel like it's what Dwayne Johnson movies try to.
Hey to man, be. All art is political.
Cool, dude. you just graduated with your English degree, dude. words on a shirt. What was I just saying? Dwayne Johnson movies try to be that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They try to be just like entertainment machines. And for this one to go above and beyond, saying like, you could
complete
tell
complete apoliticism.
Whatever.
Total apoliticism.
for Tom Cruise to be like, let's see how we can entertain people by putting me through awful things.
Yeah.
That's something America can get behind.
Yeah, like you said, in episode 2, you could put Tom Cruise in a blender and you'd watch it.
You've been listening to our old episodes?
Oh, yeah. No, I got it all memorized. Yeah.
Knew I shouldn't have had you transcript.
Remember, these episodes are entirely scripted, down to the sound effect.
Exactly. We're rehearsing. That's a deep cut. That's a deep. Is that our first inside joke for the longtime listeners?
I think so. Yeah. Congratulations, you made it.
Yeah, for the 12 different devices that this is playing on right now. I have the metrics.
Yeah. I think 3 of them are mine.
It's actually 1,200. I lied.
Oh, wow.
I've been buying traffic from the Malaysians.
That's an ego boost.
Yeah, for all of our listeners, knowing they're in good company. So, overall, for me, 2 thumbs way up. See it in theaters. I'm going to see it again in theaters, and I don't do that.
I would see it again if I'll see it again if MoviePass survives the week.
Oh, what a sad day. Yeah, MoviePass is. I just heard. Did you hear today? It's as we're recording this. They said that some people throughout the country are not able to access their MoviePass.
Oh, really? Oh no. That's
except
so
at Landmark
sad.
Theaters, which is the one they have a deal with.
Really? Huh. I did not know that.
Yeah, isn't that what you think that Landmark wouldn't take MoviePass, but they do. They actually do like the e-ticketing too. That's the first time I saw it.
Wow. That's a sad. Hopefully they can just restructure somehow. And like, I mean, I'd be willing to pay. I'd pay like $30 a month for this service. I definitely see more movies than that to still make it worth it. So.
Wait, we'll see. MoviePass is working right now, so everybody...
Yeah, I think mine was working earlier today, too, so...
Yeah,
The panic is already set in.
Yeah, honestly, they could double their price, and I would...
Yeah, I would still go for it.
I would still go for it. Because even one ticket at the Regal by me is more than $10.
Oh, yeah. It's like $13 for an Alamo Drafthouse ticket, so...
Yeah. Oh, I bought tickets for everybody at IMAX and it was great. Ooh. Like I didn't buy it for them. It was like those assigned seating things. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So we had to buy them together and everybody Venmo'd me. I got so many Regal points that when I went to like scan my card for the concessions, the person was like, do you have the app? Cause you have a lot of Regal points.
You got a lot of Regal points, boy.
I got 11,000 for buying $100 worth of IMAX tickets, and a small popcorn is 8,000 points. What is that?
Yeah, that's fucked up. I like to imagine when you have enough real points, though, there's like a secret entrance to the theater, just like a velvet entrance they ungate for you once you're a Regal high roller.
Yeah, I feel like if you're like a high roller Regal member, you should be able to kick people out of the theater.
Yeah, just go pick an usher and point to someone in the theater, get them out of here.
Yeah, that would be more theaters should have. I mean, obviously, ushers wouldn't want to do it, but because at Alamo Drafthouse, they'll kick you out for talking, right?
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever seen it happen?
Once.
Was it?
I think they were talking. They're also shit faced. So, but yeah, they do it pretty quickly.
Oh, really? They just grab you.
Yeah, you got it's like three ninjas just like rush into the theater all quiet. Like,
yeah. So do you think? It was that they were like completely smashed. Not you've never seen like people who are just like regularly like just kind of being a little too loud, like talking.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, I like to think that those type of people don't go to the draft house to begin with.
Yeah, that's what I would think too.
Yeah, I think the draft house is for fucking losers like me who you know don't do that.
Yeah, and don't have any kids.
Yeah,
because you can't bring kids in the Alamo draft house, right?
No, you can, but that's another rare occurrence. I don't really see that happening that often.
I felt like there's like special times when you can bring kids in, but like normally they don't let kids in.
I don't think, I mean, maybe, but I haven't read any of the restrictions on it because I don't have kids, so I don't have to worry about that shit.
Yeah, I would, that's a good policy if movie theaters didn't allow kids.
Yeah, there should definitely be dedicated movie theaters that don't allow kids. I think part of it too is the fact that the draft house like is a bit more expensive, and I think a lot of parents are like, "You little shits don't deserve to like get the premium seating, premium movie experience." So we're going to go to the fucking Regal matinee for $4.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That makes sense. Okay. Well, let's get into...
back to Mission Impossible. Yeah. I want to say, what were we talking about before we got a movie pass? It's how apolitical it was.
Yeah, exactly. What were your final thoughts on Mission Impossible?
I was really disappointed when Tom Cruise showed up in that scene wearing a Make America Great Again hat. That was
right, but it helped that he had a Donald Trump face on, and he gave a whole speech as Donald Trump. I saw a tweet today that there's a line in the movie where they said, like, the president knows about this, and like, no way that Donald Trump would ever know about this and not be telling. I just sent Ethan Hunt on the most dangerous mission.
They started writing the script before Trump was president, and they didn't feel like changing it afterwards.
Yeah.
Oh man. Okay, so this movie, I still think it's definitely worth seeing in a theater. Again, the stunts are great, and it's still endlessly exciting to watch Tom Cruise try to kill himself. But I just think that the other Mission Impossible movies are better, and I'm curious to see what the general consensus is gonna be once I think the hype surrounding this movie dies down a bit, because I still think I think five was actually funnier than this one.
I think you're just a hamper full of dirty clothes.
I am. I'm just a fucking wet noodle.
All right. Well, let's get into it. Let's run the series on Mission Impossible.
Hit me with that Brian De Palma MI1.
Yeah. All right. Mission Impossible 1. Sound effect. Sound effect. Sound effect.
I'm not putting a sound effect in.
I thought we had a deal. Every time I say sound effect, there has to be a sound effect in there. Whatever, we'll do it live.
You haven't paid me in weeks.
My food stamps haven't come in yet.
We're got an expired coupon to Chuck E. Cheese. That's not payment.
Things are stretched out here, all right? Okay, we all get paid on Friday.
Visit our Patreon.
Yeah, please visit our Patreon for $10 a month. I will text you goodnight every night at a time of your choosing. But it has to be consistent. Mission Impossible 1, the Brian De Palma classic that kicked it all off. The reboot of the original TV show.
Yeah, Mission Impossible. I didn't know it was a reboot for the longest time.
Yeah, it's surprising that the theme has stayed with it the longest.
Yeah. Okay, so you know the one thing that blew my mind about this movie that I didn't know about because I didn't know it was a reboot, but John Voight's character is the main character from the TV series.
Really? I did not know that.
I had no idea. Apparently, there was a lot, when this movie first came out, there was a lot of uproar from fans of the original TV series because of, you know, John Voight's character and how they turned the original. Okay, are we doing spoilers for the Mission Impossible series in this run of the series? Like, these are old movies. You can watch them on Netflix.
I say whatever the statute of limitations on spoilers, it's 20 years. 20 years is... You could kill somebody and then 20 years later and they can't get you for it.
I think, is that how it works?
I'm
Is there a statute of limitations 80% on murder? Sure. I don't think there's a statute of limitations on murder.
Why wouldn't there be? Why would there be a statute of limitations on anything? Like, why would
I ain't a fucking lawyer. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, murder, not like a war crime. You know what I mean?
No, not really.
Like, they're not going to go chase you down in Argentina if you just killed a guy. Like,
it depends on who you killed.
Most people.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I think it also depends on the war crime. Like, I don't think anybody's going to chase you down in Argentina if you... Never, I'm not going to go there. Never mind. I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, exactly. What war crime could you think of that they wouldn't want to hunt you down for it?
If you, like, fucking shot someone down. Like, so a war crime counts as just breaking the rules of engagement, though. So if you just shot someone who was parachuting, that's a war crime.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to hunt you down in Argentina for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
You commit genocide, probably going to try to hunt you down in Argentina. But
probably. I'd say your chances are 60-40.
Yeah, they're going to send Oscar Isaac after you, make a movie about it.
Okay. Well, Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
John Voight is the... So he's the old character. I didn't know that. I don't... This movie is so boring in a lot of parts and so exciting in like two parts.
Yeah. And I think everybody knows the two parts.
Yeah, especially like the one main part. That's good. And then it's like the movie kind of just goes insane. Like it is. It's really dumb.
You know what I couldn't stop thinking about when I was watching this movie? And there's that entire scene with Leon the Professional. And he's like, I've got the disc. And then Ethan Hunt starts doing his fucking bullshit magic tricks, his sleight of hand.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, this disc. And then whoop, it disappears. I couldn't stop thinking about the scene in Ant-Man and the Wasp where Paul Rudd is doing the magic tricks with the FBI agent. And he's like, how did you do that?
That, yeah, the magic trick that, like, Mission Impossible, you can tell, is when Tom Cruise is kind of like, I can make a movie happen.
Yeah.
Like, he's executive producing, like, he's making this. This is the start of him being like, oh, I just get, like, one famous guy, like, a good director with, like, a crazy script. I can drive it. Like, because he drives the movie.
Oh, really. Yeah. It's a very different performance in this one, too, than any of the other Mission Impossibles. Like, this one feels, it's kind of... it's like interesting to watch almost, this one.
And I hate to say that.
No, I think that's an apt descriptor of this movie, though. And I think it's gritty and it's paranoid, and that's something that you don't get in any other Mission Impossible movie. It's just the paranoia of Mission Impossible 1,
which is interesting because every Mission Impossible like essentially has the same plot,
like
the same plot of like, oh, Ethan's got to get this thing, but wait. Everyone's disowned him.
Yeah.
But once he gets this thing, they'll take him back, and then his boss will be dead in the next movie. He will have a new boss in the next movie.
That's why we need the IMF. Of course, that's why we need the IMF.
Right. The truest line is in Mission Impossible 3 when he's walking over the bridge with his wife explaining everything. And he's like, it's called the Impossible Mission Force. And she's like, really? He's like, yeah, really?
Yeah.
The IMF. The truest... Yeah, that did not it did not age well.
The truest line was in I think the fifth one when Ving Rhames, like Jeremy Renner and Tom Cruise are arguing, and Ving Rhames is just like, and sometimes Ethan is the one who can, or Ethan's the only one who can see the only way. And I was like, yeah, that's every movie.
Yeah. Ving Rhames, I love how throughout the series. First of all, Ving Rhames is the only character who's consistent besides Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
And he's always just saying the dumbest shit.
Yeah.
And making it sound so poignant.
Dude, I love it, though.
Like, when he's explaining, like...
He had a lot to say in this one.
Yeah, and it was all so stupid, like...
Yeah. Dude, you're talking about this while you're diffusing a fucking...
She knew the world needed him more than she needed him. Yeah. What are you talking about, dude?
Oh, my God. Holy shit. I cannot wait to go back and rewatch Fallout when I'm just completely shit faced in my own home. Like, it's gonna be a great time. Oh boy. Back to Mission Impossible 1, though. Yeah.
So the basic plot is that there's a mole in the IMF who ruins everything.
Yeah.
And
the first mission is pretty brutal when everyone dies.
Yeah, everyone dies in a very, very upsetting ways. Like, it's, and that's like where the paranoia comes in. Like, oh, all the people. And then it turns out not everybody's dead, but they think that Ethan, which is, it's the dumbest thing that these people are secret agents. And they're like, Ethan, you're the only one alive. That means you must be the mole. And it's like, why would
you tell me you've never framed anyone before?
Right,
like,
exactly.
That's a fucking job description.
These guys are like the small, like stupider brother of the CIA. Just like,
no wonder the CIA wants to shut them down. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You guys are
these guys are a fucking waste of money, man.
They're just like So that happens, and he goes rogue, and then he's trying to contact apparently the mole was trying to sell the knock list, which is just all of the undercover agents, American agents, their code names with their cover names with their real names.
Yeah.
And so Ethan tries to set this buy up, and other stuff happens. John Voight's the bad guy. He betrays everybody.
Yeah, he masterminded
everything.
A
helicopter goes through a train tunnel.
You got Leon the Professional in the movie.
Yeah, the big scene is Ethan is Tom Cruise rappelling from the ceiling. That's like the famous one.
Yeah. That's I mean, it's still, I think it holds up, but it's also still pretty silly.
It's pretty silly. It doesn't know it's silly yet.
Yeah. Yeah. This movie has no idea. This movie plays it completely straight the entire time.
Yeah. Which is, I think, if we just want to move into the second one.
Yeah.
I think it's what makes the second one not as good, more enjoyable though.
The second one is hilarious. The second one aged strangely. I was smiling the entire time I was watching the second one because it was so fucking stupid.
Is John Woo dead?
No, John Woo is not dead. He's still directing movies for Netflix now.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
because this movie he directed
Face Off though, so you know he doesn't really need to direct anything else.
Yeah, it shows. These two movies are very similar. I watched them very close together.
Yeah,
and this one is the one where I could have seen Mission Impossible going a very different route, and it needed Mission Impossible 2 to be like, for John Woo to be like, this is hilarious and ridiculous, and you don't know it, Brian De Palma. I'm going to show you how hilarious and ridiculous this series is.
Yeah.
And it's always been like coming, reeling it in from there.
What a jarring tonal shift to go from Mission Impossible 1 to Mission Impossible 2.
Oh my god, yeah. It is the slow motion,
the doves,
the young Thandie Newton,
the long hair, the motorcycles.
The motorcycles.
That early 2000s, like half EDM, half rock music soundtrack.
Yeah, like, yeah, like that like weird angelic singing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
We need more choirs.
Yeah, and the face reveals.
Mm-hmm.
So many, and they're all insane.
I will say there was one scene in Mission Impossible 2 that actually got me pretty like, oh, that was actually pretty well done. And it was when, I don't remember the bad guy's name, but it's when the bad guy was smoking the cigar. And then he thinks that, like his henchman is questioning when Thandie Newton comes, and he's like, "Oh, she's clearly here to manipulate you, dude."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Say that again to my fucking face." And he like takes his finger and puts it in the cigar cutter.
Yeah.
I was like, "Ooh, that's actually pretty intense." That was good.
Oh yeah, no, it's in John Woo movies are like intense, like violent, like Face Off is a very violent movie.
Absolutely.
A kid gets shot in the first like 2 minutes.
Like, yeah, and he makes a joke out of it.
Yeah, exactly. It's messed up. This movie is a lot more playful than the first one. Definitely styles Ethan Hunt is more of like a James Bond character.
Yeah, this is like stage two Ethan Hunt before he becomes full on superhero.
Yeah, exactly.
He hasn't reached his final evolution yet.
Right, and it's just so funny that everything about it, the plot doesn't make any sense. It's got Anthony Hopkins as the leader of the IMF.
Yeah,
help me out here. I can't even think what the plot's about. The guy is a dealer. Ethan Hunt is involved with Thandie Newton, and they're dating. And then Anthony Hopkins is like, "We need her to date her old boyfriend, this arms dealer." And it's like, "Oh, okay, this is tension, isn't it?"
Man, and I was thrown for a when Anthony Hopkins showed up on screen, I had to make sure that was actually Anthony Hopkins and not just like a B-list lookalike for Anthony Hopkins, because I forgot that he was even in this movie.
He's in it. I bet they filmed his scenes in like a day.
Yeah, they just went to his own house and filmed scenes and then went back to the set.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But yeah, so the plot of this movie is the movie opens up on a plane with some Russian scientist and then someone pretending to be Ethan Hunt. And the Russian scientist is trying to like smuggle this deadly virus out of Russia because, you know, he doesn't want it to become weaponized. But it turns out Ethan Hunt in the plane sitting next to him is actually the bad guy, because I guess the bad guys have like face printing technology too. They have all the tech that the IMF has.
This movie is what Face Off exists because of this movie.
Yes, because, this inspired John Woo to make Face Off, for sure.
Oh, yeah, because John Woo's just like, what if their face is actually...
Yeah, what if his face came off?
Yeah, his face... Oh.
And then as soon as he said those words, just the script began floating down from heaven and onto his desk. Like, he didn't even write it. It just appeared.
Yeah, Nick Cage gave him a call and said, listen, man, I want to be in a new movie. It's got to be weird. I'm thinking of going in a new direction.
And yo, John, I'm going to text, like, John Travolta.
Baby, I got it. Yeah. So.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, this one has all the hallmarks of, like, cliche, like, just bullet time out the wazoo. Yeah,
this is a prime example of, like, that immediate post-Matrix trend, where everybody in the early 2000s was trying to be cool as fuck, black leather everything, bullet time, long hair, sunglasses, but these sunglasses explode. And motorcycles. A lot of motorcycles.
Yeah, it is funny that, like, in retrospect, that the Wachowskis got us all into, like, light bondage, like, stuff.
Oh, yeah, well, because they were clearly into it.
Oh, yeah, no, they were, and now we're just like, oh, yeah, they were going through a lot.
Yeah, well, that's why, okay, you ever want to giggle a little bit at, like, mid-2000s Americans culture, just go back on YouTube and look up, like, the Matrix Reloaded or Matrix Revolutions midnight premieres. And just see, like, the fandom surrounding those movies.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy.
Top runner.
Yeah.
The runners and the agents.
Yeah.
I'm a sentinel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And oh, my God. It was
like
so
real life
weird.
Anime.
Yeah, pretty much. And it really puts into perspective, like, how I think it kind of shows why franchises like Star Wars are more sustainable. It's because it never came off as that cringy.
Well, because there's kids involved. With The Matrix, it's an R-rated movie, so, you know, these are adults.
Okay, that's true, but The Matrix was an R-rated movie, but I was definitely a kid, and I know a lot of the kids in my class were into The Matrix when it came out, and we were like, I don't know, 10? But, like, I for Halloween, multiple times, I definitely just got a fucking black trench coat and some sunglasses and was like, yo, I'm Neo. I'm Neo, I'm cool. Before it became, like, the uniform for school shooters and, like, every... I think that's another... that's another thing I think that really, like, killed the Matrix fandom and that aesthetic was the
no
whole...
No pun intended.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, no pun intended. I'm not that dark. I'm not James Gunn.
Yeah. Mission Impossible 3 is I think the archetype for how the rest of it would go. But
Mission
I think
Impossible 3 saved the franchise.
Mission Impossible 3 said that that there could be sequels to this. Like, the John Woo one, they did it, and it's like, all right, we got to get somebody else. And it's like, let's try the guy from Lost.
Dude, the John Woo one nearly killed that franchise. It was 6 years between... Mission Impossible 2, Mission Impossible 3.
Really?
And I guarantee you it's because J.J. Abrams was like that this was his passion project. Because, like, it was his own production company too. He was like, hey, I want to revive this franchise. Like, the producers were not trying to make a Mission Impossible 3 because Mission Impossible 2 wasn't well received at all.
Right, but I mean, I don't think Mission Impossible 2, maybe it was just like a sign of, like, the times of them being like, oh, we don't have, like, a reference point for this. Like, it's just really weird and, like, not good. It because it doesn't take itself as seriously, I enjoy 2 more than 1, even though 1 has better set pieces.
Yeah, I think you could easily make the argument of 1 being the better film. But if I was going to sit down with people and, like, want to have a good time watching Mission Impossible movie, I would put on 2 before 1.
Yeah, 1 isn't as good as it wants to be.
Yeah.
2 is as ridiculous as it wants to be. Like,
yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Like, you know, and it's kind of how I don't remember we were talking what movie we were talking to, about this with, but Mission Impossible 1 it takes itself more seriously. It wants us to take it more serious. We were talking about Sicario 2. It wants us to take it more seriously than it deserves.
Yeah.
And 2 does not do that. 3 is kind of like the sweet spot, I feel like, is when it's like, all right, we know this is kind of ridiculous. We're going to give you, like, the face swaps and the,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
the globe trotting the, you know, the tech,
the MacGuffin.
The most full blown MacGuffin. Like,
yeah,
we're going to introduce like some comedic characters. Like, we're going to, it's going to be fun.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's also when Simon Pegg was introduced to the series, which I think Simon Pegg's presence helps a lot more than people give him credit for.
Yeah, no, I think so too. I think it establishes a very good tone for the entire movie, that you know that no matter where they go, things will be a little bit light.
Yeah. It's a really good compliment to Ethan Hunt's character, having that, like,
very intense and very well, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, I think Mission Impossible 3 is a really good blend, I think, of 1 and 2. And I think J.J. Abrams knew that, but it also feels like it feels like a reboot. It feels like I don't think they reference anything that happens in the first two films in this movie.
Well, they don't reference in 2. They don't reference anything that happened in 1.
Okay, that's fair. They don't really reference previous films all that often.
Yeah, the movies are pretty standalone.
Yeah, and up until these new movies.
Yeah, literally this one is like the first one that references, like, the most recent one is the first one that references past movies, I feel like, ever.
Yeah.
And it does, like, it references a lot of the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in very tiny ways that don't impact the plot at all. Going back, Mission Impossible 2 is the most profitable. It was the highest grossing movie of 2000.
What?
Yeah. It made $546.4 million. So it was a successful movie.
Not critically, though.
Doesn't matter.
I mean, yeah, I guess it doesn't matter. So then it does make me wonder why. I wonder if Tom Cruise was like, yeah, that was fucking stupid. I don't want to do this movie. I don't want to do another one until we have a good director in the chair. Yeah.
So he had, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's odd. If it was that successful, why did it take them 6 years to make another entry in the franchise?
Yeah, it made more than Mission Impossible 1. Granted, it had like a slightly higher budget, but yeah, that's something.
Yeah, I'm sure the trailers were probably mind-blowing.
Yeah. Philip Seymour Hoffman is a big thing to talk about with 3, because I think he really carries the movie.
I think he's the main thing to talk about with 3.
Yeah, it's like, what is the memorable thing about 3? It's Philip Seymour Hoffman, and just that he's, you know, I believe when he was, like, working, he was probably, like, the greatest, like, living actor. Like, he was amazing in the weird, like, the tiniest ways. That's, yeah, a movie that you don't have to show up for,
but he does, you know?
He does. He shows up and makes it look like easy.
Yeah, dude, if this motherfucker showed up for the Hunger Games, he's definitely showing up for Mission Impossible.
Yeah, exactly. He was so good, and this movie kind of shows, like, even just like the first scene is kind of like, hey, this movie is gonna be intense, and it's, yeah, showing like how Philip Seymour Hoffman is kind of like, It was giving you the intensity of the past ones and forcing you to take it seriously right away.
I think that, okay, so one of the reasons I think I like 3 and Philip Seymour Hoffman a lot is because, again, it's that smaller scale conflict. Like, it's when Ethan Hunt is fighting Philip Seymour Hoffman, it's not a save the world situation. Like, it's not like, if I don't complete this mission, nukes are gonna go off across the country. It's, if I don't complete this mission, then this arms dealer just, like, gets something else to sell. And I feel it made it more plausible for the villain to win in a situation like this. And I think that it added to the intensity and gravity of Mission Impossible 3. The opening too, when he straight up kills the spy that Ethan Hunt was sent in to rescue with the explosive capsule in her head.
That's not at the beginning of the movie, though.
That's the first act.
Yeah, it's the first act. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first scene in the movie is
the interrogation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it's almost like bringing it back and reeling it in. It's like, oh, remember how Tom Cruise is an actor? Like, he'll do that.
Yeah.
And there's still, this is kind of when there's some bone crunching in this movie.
Yeah. I think you could also call this movie gritty.
Oh, yeah. It's that before we were all, like, burnt out on J.J. Abrams doing, like, everything. It has a very, like, Lost vibe, like, that the way that it's, like, filmed and the color grading.
Yeah. Not as many Dutch angles as Mission Impossible 1, though, thank God.
Yeah, Mission Impossible 1 is all Dutch angles. Overall, this is a pretty good movie. I'd say it's the best. It's it's better than the first two.
Yeah. I think this is where the upward trend starts for Mission Impossible.
Yeah, it's a blueprint for like the rest of the series.
Yeah.
And then they start perfecting it.
Agreed.
So that brings us to arguably the best one, Mission Impossible 4, the first one with the subtitle Ghost Protocol.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you anything about the plot. It doesn't matter.
It involves nukes. Someone wants to bring about a new world order with nukes. Like,
yeah, I love it. Yeah. It's great. You got Jeremy Renner is in it. You got, you know, the Burj Khalifa scene. Like, that's the scene.
Yeah, really. You got the Wiz Khalifa scene.
Yeah. I mean, this is the first one that I remember going into the theater and being like, oh, I liked that. That was like, that had, I don't remember liking Mission Impossible that much. It was like the first series that I was exposed to where the movies could get better.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, you're always expecting like, oh, it'll be like that, just like the same. It's like, oh, wow, that was actually like really good. Why was it that good?
Oh, you mean this franchise isn't suffering diminishing returns? What?
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of that is Brad Bird.
For sure. I remember when I heard about this movie being made. One, again, I went to see it in IMAX because I wanted to see the Dark Knight Rises 15-minute preview they had before the movie. But I was also
opening scene, yeah.
Yeah, with the plane. And man, right. I was hyped. So like that got my blood pumping to begin with. But thankfully, Ghost Protocol was just it's a really good movie too.
Oh yeah, and this is actually 5 years after Mission Impossible 3. So it's still like there's some space in between these movies.
Yeah. I think they're it's interesting now because there's not as much space between them now, and I'm kind of curious to see if that is going to be the norm or if this was just like a one-off with it, because I think it was only 3 years between Rogue Nation and Fallout.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ghost Protocol, I also remember hearing about it because I love Brad Bird, and anyone not familiar with Brad Bird, he's the director of animated films like The Iron Giant, Ratatouille, and The Incredibles.
He was a huge director on The Simpsons. He did so many
You were telling me about that. Episodes. Yeah. But yeah, so this was his first live action film. And I was very curious to see what that was going to look like. And it was awesome. Like he clearly knows how to translate his action scene, like his set piece direction from animated films into live action, which has got to be interesting because I feel like there's no restrictions when it comes to believability in an animated film. But I guess this is the best franchise for him to take on as a live action franchise because it's not like there's a whole lot of believability in Mission Impossible either. So
yeah, it's a living animation, like as much as
it's a live action cartoon. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the big one is just kind of like how it forgets good movies set things up in the beginning. And like set things up and then have them come back later when you're not expecting. Like, yeah. You know, you ever see something in a movie where you're like, oh, that's a plot point. Like, they're going to bring that back later. A good movie will kind of be like, hey, this thing's coming up like later. Don't forget about it. And then it makes you forget about it. So when it comes back, you're like, oh, no, it's happening. It's like the sandstorm scene after the Burj Khalifa. They say like, oh, a sandstorm's coming in, but we'll miss it. So thank God.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what I really liked about this movie, too, is one, I think it has a really good sense of humor. And I think giving Simon Pegg more screen time was a really good choice. But I also like that none of the tech in this movie fucking works ever. Like all the tech breaks eventually. And it makes it, I think, a lot more fun because then you really get to see the team improvise. Like you get to see why they're IMF agents. They're not IMF, like they don't just rely on their technology. They can, it reminds me a lot of like Iron Man 3, where improvisation is what really defines the character and being able to like cope without relying on all the insane non-existent technology.
Yeah, exactly. Because we don't care about the technology. We care about like the characters and how they, you know, them responding to things breaking down is more interesting than watching them just like, oh, look, this umbrella like projects like what the hallway looks like.
Yeah. I mean, that was a funny, I think there's also a lot of really good visual humor in this movie, too.
Yeah. And I think that speaks to Brad Bird is like, you know, for animation, I feel like animation has got a lot more visual puns than live action movies.
Yeah. God, and this, yeah, this movie's great. And this, I think this is also the beginning of when you start to see. So you got hints of how insane Ethan Hunt was in Mission Impossible 3. I think he goes more insane in this one. And I think that's what makes it more fun. Especially during the parking garage fight scene when he drives a fucking car off the parking space to get to the bottom of the, bottom floor. And that's then his mission accomplished moment. Yeah.
it is the beginning of the stunts.
Yeah.
Like it's the beginning of like, hey, we know what these movies are going to be like. Some crazy like set pieces, and we didn't realize that was going to be the bit from here on out. But then with this,
I think this, it was like this is when Tom Cruise fully absorbed Ethan Hunt into his own persona.
Yeah, when he started tying himself like this is my franchise.
This
is going to make us all a lot of money.
Yeah, if Ethan Hunt would drive a car off a parking garage, I'm going to drive a car off a parking garage.
And that's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I couldn't say enough like nice things about it. It's just like such an entertaining movie.
Yeah, I love Ghost Protocol.
This is a good entry point in the series, I think, as well. Like, if somebody is saying like, "Oh, I want to get like into Mission Impossible," and I actually want them to watch it, I'd be like, "Start with this one." Like,
yeah, I think you could start with 3 and then take them to this one, because I feel like if you show them this one, it's gonna be rough because the other ones are all gonna be judged against this one, and this one is so fucking good.
Yeah, it's like seeing the best of the series like first almost. Yeah, yeah. That would be, I mean, yeah, so maybe show them, yeah, 3 would be good, but I feel like 4 is so above and beyond like good.
Yeah. This is like when nobody really cared about this franchise either. They were like, "Oh, okay, it's another Mission Impossible movie. It's happening."
Yeah, cool. Wow, they're making a fourth one.
Yeah. Now the franchise is bigger than it's ever been, which is kind of weird to me that like, I guess it's another Fast and Furious situation.
Like where, it really hit its stride like around like 6 is when it starts getting to like a cultural head.
Yeah.
So that mean the next one's going to be the best one?
I hope so. Oh my God. Get James Wan to direct the next one.
We could get somebody else. Not saying that he wouldn't probably do a good job. I think there's another level of Mission Impossible that could be achieved.
You know, you know who I would really love to see? Complete perfect dream casting director, or I guess dream director for Mission Impossible 7.
Tarantino?
No, that'd be very interesting. But I would want to go with Gareth Evans, who directed the Raid series. I don't know if you've seen those Indonesian action films.
He also directed... what's it called? Godzilla, right?
No, that's Gareth Edwards.
Wait, who did you say?
Gareth Evans.
Oh, excuse
I know, fucking,
me.
fucking white people. I know.
Yeah, all the same. Interesting. And those are good? I've never seen them.
Those are
really
amazing.
Good.
Those are... fuck it, I'll say it. They are the best action films of the 2010s.
Ooh, the teens?
Yeah. 2010 to 2020. I mean, I guess there's still a couple years left, so maybe something will impress me more, but the Raid 1 and the Raid 2 are the best action films of the 2010s.
I'll have to watch them.
You should.
They're good. Yeah, I mean, you just said they're good.
Yeah.
I'd see that just based on your recommendation alone. I'd like to see John Singleton direct one. I would like to see Ang Lee direct one.
Hey, he's directed.
I would like to see.
I hope they recast Eric Bana as Ethan Hunt.
That would be great. I'd like to see Peter Jackson direct one.
Oh my God, a 3-hour Mission Impossible.
I would like to see Paul Newman's Ghost. All right, doesn't matter. let's just go into Rogue Nation.
Yeah, roll right into it.
Rogue Nation is the one where you realize that they could keep up the same level of quality pretty much.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, wow, this series isn't going to get immediately worse. Like, this is, Rogue Nation is more like stunt. This is when they start putting the stunts forward.
I don't know. I thought the stunts were pretty forward in Ghost Protocol.
in Ghost Protocol, the big thing was like the birds, like leaf, like this is, but that was kind of like, I feel like in Rogue Nation is when they start really integrating the stunts into like the broader story of like, oh, well now we got to have like these like crazy stunt like sequences.
I'm not entirely sure what you mean, because like, I don't know, there are some crazy stunt sequences in Ghost Protocol.
Yeah, I think there are. I think they're kind of kept separate from like the rest of the movie, though, if that makes sense.
So you think that there was like more story delivered in the stunt sequences in Rogue Nation?
I think that they are put into the story, not necessarily in a more like organic way. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say. That like the Burj Khalif is kind of like, is he really doing this? Like, is this like this really? It kind of feels like a this is like a set piece.
But he was really doing it.
Yeah, exactly. But like, why?
Because he had to get up to the server room.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I guess that's.
The set pieces in Rogue Nation are, I feel like, pretty like the one I think of was the underwater sequence when he had to replace the microchip so that Benji wouldn't get killed when he infiltrated the base. But I'm like, that's like the same. That's like the same exact setup they had for infiltrating the server room in Ghost Protocol.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to like downplay Rogue Nation. To me, Rogue Nation and Ghost Protocol are on the same level. I think I enjoyed them equally, if not equally, pretty close.
Yeah, I think I was pretty similar in there. I think after the like the plane stunt, then I feel like it's like, oh well, here's a story with just some like heightened action sequences that don't draw as much attention to themselves as like the Burj Khalif's scene.
Yeah.
But that's just like my opinion.
What I really like, and one of the things I like the most about Rogue Nation is that, so whereas Ghost Protocol, you really start to see like the beginnings of Ethan Hunt being a fucking crazy person.
Yeah.
Rogue Nation leans into it so hard. And I love it. Like, I love the fact that Ethan dies in this one and then gets resurrected. And then he like, okay, so the pacing of the set pieces in like the latter half of the movie are breakneck. And it's so much fun because you go from infiltrating that base, the underwater sequence, to the car chase when Ethan is like, after he'd literally just been revived, to the motorcycle sequence.
Yeah, the motorcycle sequence is bonkers.
Yeah, I thought the motorcycle sequence in Rogue Nation was actually better than the motorcycle chase through Paris in Fallout. But that's also just, hey, it's just my opinion, man.
Yeah, the one in Fallout it made me more anxious. It was more anxiety inducing.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, he's weaving in the cars. Like, are those cars digitally added? Oh, no, they're not. Yeah. This is scary.
It's okay. He lived.
Yeah, it's okay. He's alive. Yeah. He's alive.
But man, I love that scene after Ethan Hunt is revived and he's about to get in the car and he's all like, you know, he's out of his mind. And Benji's like, are you sure you should be driving? Like, you were just dead a couple minutes ago. And he's like, what are you talking about? it leans so hard and how fucking, oh, and then also 5 introduces Alec Baldwin, which is another reason I love it. And the highlight of this entire fucking franchise is the monologue Alec Baldwin gives to the British Prime Minister. You remember that scene when the Prime Minister is they trick him into revealing that the syndicate exists. And then he's like, I'm going to leave. And Alec Baldwin was like, you cannot leave this room. Ethan Hunt, there's no secret Ethan Hunt cannot extract. Nothing he will not do. No puzzle he cannot figure out. He is the living manifestation of destiny. And Alec Baldwin was so fucking good in that. Oh, my God.
He is great. Oh, man.
That scene, that face reveal when he reveals that he was like impersonating the British MI6 agent, and it just zooms in on Alec Baldwin's face as his mouth is like agape, and then he's just like, Hunt. Five is so fucking good.
It's when it starts like.
I think that's when it truly understands itself. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, we know what we're doing now. Like it's going to get better for me. Oh man.
Yeah,
it's,
And I think that's also why I think like, okay, so I really love 5. I love it a lot more than I thought I did. And watching it again.
I love it a lot more, just like us talking about it,
yeah,
actually.
It's so, and that's also kind of why, like, the hype was so high for Mission Impossible 6. I think it was unreasonably high, for me at least, that yeah. maybe that's why I came off not enjoying it as much as everyone else did. But I think, again, what going back and watching it again, I'll probably enjoy it more once I see it a second time. I was coming off that high of 5, so.
yeah. Very good. All right, do we want to do our rankings? We've been talking about Mission Impossible for a solid.
Yeah, this is a solid hour of Mission Impossible conversation.
Yeah, nobody's listening right now. Everyone's like probably turned it off.
Yeah, but they're not fucking nerds. They don't love Ethan Hunt like we do.
All right, what's your least favorite one?
Mission Impossible 2.
I'm gonna go Mission Impossible 1.
That's fair.
At least, yeah. All right, what's your second least favorite one?
Mission Impossible 1.
Mine's Mission Impossible 2.
Yeah, I think right, it's yeah.
All right, and then third from the bottom would be Mission Impossible 3 for both of us, I assume.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and that's like right where I feel like that's the order just starts like becoming more preference like after 3. Where it's like, you know, I feel like the next three are like the best ones.
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
what order they fall in.
Although I put like Fallout on the same level as 3 for me, because I mean, that's also just me saying really? I really enjoy 3. I'm not saying Fallout is worse than the other ones. I'm just saying I really enjoy 3. I thought 3 is really good. And I think a lot of it has to do with Philip Seymour Hoffman. And I go back and think of that scene when they are impersonating him. And then they pull up into the sewer and he's just looking down at the sewer at Ving Rhames, and he's just like, sup. Just seeing Philip Seymour Hoffman do that is so fun.
He is the way that they handle it, that the last scene is stupid. It's bad.
What when
the final fight.
Oh. Yeah. That didn't need to happen.
It's pretty anticlimactic.
Yeah. And like he was never intimidating because he was good at fist fighting. Like,
right? Yeah, exactly. He was always, you know, the guy.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. And then so this is where it gets. This is where it gets. Yeah, tricky. I guess I think we're gonna
differentiate a bit.
Yeah. What's the third best?
The third best. Well, the third best I think was. Oh, third best. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with Mission Impossible Fallout.
I'm going to go with Rogue Nation.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. That would be mine.
Okay.
And so I think we know how each other's actually, I don't know about you. I think we actually both did we did a swift swap.
Yeah. We did a face reveal.
Yeah. I think both of our next ones is Ghost Protocol.
Actually, I'm going to go with Rogue Nation.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Ghost Protocol is my favorite Mission Impossible.
Really, this new one is my favorite one.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a fair ranking. Again, like once you get past 3, I think they're all interchangeable. Because it really is just personal preference. But
And I would just say that they're those last 3 are just all so enjoyable.
Yeah, for sure. Do you want to talk a little bit about why it's your favorite?
Yeah, it's my favorite because of the stunt work, and just from the very beginning, I knew I was in for a ride, and I felt like the movie was always one step ahead of me, and whenever I thought I was going to get a little, I got a lot. Like that's
what a deal.
I didn't plan on saying that, but the fact that when I just said it, just like I always felt like I was going to get a little, but then I always got a lot.
Yeah.
It was like, there's a scene in the movie where he says like, oh, I'm starting to see why you guys enjoy this so much.
It's Alec Baldwin is so good, man. Yeah. That entire sequence in that movie with Alec Baldwin, I think was my favorite part of that movie.
We grabbed the gun and shot the...
Oh, you were doing so good. You were doing so good, sport. Like,
yeah. Until that last part.
Yeah. God, all these movies. These movies are so much fun, man. I love these movies.
They're great. Oh god. Why is Ghost Protocol your favorite?
I think out of all of these more recent movies, it has the best sense of humor. And again, I just like it the most. I think because it does the most to subvert the Mission Impossible formula. with like all the gadgets breaking all the time. There's not a whole lot of continuity that you have to care about. Like, you see his wife at the end. Also, like, I like that it introduced Jeremy Renner. I thought Jeremy Renner was actually a pretty good foil to Ethan Hunt.
Yeah, I liked Jeremy Renner a lot. I think he was very...
I was kind of bummed he wasn't in this one, in Fallout. That's another. That's another star.
Too busy filming for the Avengers.
That's another star off the rating. Yeah.
Done.
Yeah, but yeah, I still think that this had the best set pieces as well, because I think about the Burj Khalifa scene going into the standoff with the terrorists that they're dealing with, and how just like it builds tension really well with having that like their entire plan is ridiculous as always. But I think it did a good job of building tension and letting the audience know what was happening in each room, because they were happening separately. But then how that flows into the sandstorm scene and the car chase in the sandstorm, which was amazing. And like when he rams the car into the SUV, and then you see him jump out and the SUV like flies out of the background right over him. Like, ooh, like it felt like a live action cartoon in the best way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know exactly what you're saying. I would never argue with that. I think it's a sound.
I think both opinion. Our rankings are sound.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all I really want.
Yeah. Sound rankings.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've been through a lot here today.
Yeah.
I'm sweating.
We thought it was impossible, but hey, mission accomplished.
Oh. That was spooky. All right. Well, what movie are we going to see next week, Rob? I feel like we haven't really decided.
We haven't really decided, but I think we got a couple choices. One of the options I was thinking was...
Let's see Death of a Nation.
Let's not.
Oh, I would love to just roast that movie alive.
Let's go see. Yeah, okay. The problem is we'd be giving it money.
MoviePass.
Even with MoviePass, we'd be giving it money. It's not about me losing money. It's about me giving that piece of shit any money at all.
I think Dinesh D'Souza will be back in jail eventually.
I hope so.
Unless he commits a murder and waits 20 years.
Oh, good point. Because see, we just gave him out.
Of the statute of limitations.
Why did you tell him about the statute of limitations on murder? Maybe he'll commit a war crime.
Right, but yeah, one of the real bad ones. Not just shooting at paratroopers.
Yeah.
I think we have a few options. I think maybe Spy Who Dumped Me?
No, fuck you. We could see... Christopher Robin.
I don't want to see that.
Oh, hello there. I think, honestly...
Despite you and McGregor.
I wouldn't mind seeing 8th Grade. I haven't seen 8th Grade yet.
Oh, I saw 8th Grade. It's good.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know if you want to talk about that then, since it wouldn't be until next
nationwide,
week.
Nationwide, so... Yeah, maybe it will.
That is a movie that I want to see.
Yeah. Well, we will keep you all posted, our viewing anglers.
Yeah. Follow our socials if you want to stay up to date on what's happening with the podcast.
Yeah, the podcast, the trailers, the movie news. We're on top of it all the time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been real fun this week, everybody. I have been your A-host, Dan Leo. Please follow me on Twitter at The Dan Leo Show. And Letterboxd, username is DLeo. I'll have all my rankings up and reviews. It's always a fun time. And follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram and on Facebook. It's all Viewing Angles. Come on, you know the drill. The website is viewingangles.com. And with me, as always, is the Bucky Boy Wonder with better hair.
Yeah, call me
better forehead.
Bucky Barnes, the best forehead in the MCU. My name has been Robert Mecki. You can follow me on Twitter and Letterboxd and Instagram at Robert Jr. JR. Take me out of here, man. I don't like
Hotel
being here anymore.
Hotel Transylvania has made almost $120 million in the U.S. alone, and that's the fact we're going to leave you on. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.